It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 430. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free at www.instanthousecall.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. You can email me questions, suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. I have a great voicemail. It's a long message. It's about OpenDNS and problems with it, and you definitely want to hear that. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. Facebook, send me a friend request. Follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. Also, don't forget the wiki. That is mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all the past shows and the show notes, information on the software and hardware I use for my studio. Great resource. Well, in addition to the voicemail on OpenDNS, I have some great emails with some issues that some listeners have sent in that I want to get to. One, how to figure out performance and problems with computers. I also want to talk about a couple things that I'm working on. Behind me, if you're watching in the chat and on Ustream, I have a laptop that I had lent to a client for literally a couple months. As they were waiting to get into their new office, I had their new equipment stored here. We finally got them in. I worked tirelessly on Friday and Monday to get them totally moved in and connected in their new office. It's running great. I couldn't have asked for it to go any better. Now that they're up and running, I got my laptop back. So what did I do Monday night? After working all day, the first thing I do, I get home, I pop out the hard drive that's in this laptop. That's a Core i7, 8 gigs of memory. And I had a 750 gig hard drive in there. I had purchased the Samsung 830 256 gig SSD drive. I place that in the laptop. I get my final release of Windows 8 Pro, which I've had now for a long time, and I haven't been able to install it on any hardware because I really didn't have any hardware available. I put that on. It was the easiest installation of an OS that I've ever had. I will dedicate a special show just to Windows 8. And as a matter of fact, it may be in addition to the normal Thursday night shows, because I have already put together what I think is a great presentation for next month's Philadelphia Area Computer Society. I host the Windows Tips and Tricks SIG the third Saturday of every month. And next month, on November 17th, which happens to be my birthday too, I will be giving a great presentation on Windows 8. Everything you wanted to know about it. The tips, tricks, how to get rid of the Metro interface that comes up, which is the new start menu interface. I got lots of great things already. The presentation is almost totally done. So I'm looking forward to that. I will also make sure I turn that into a Mike Tech Show and I record a special edition just to let you know what's happening with Windows 8 and my opinions and what version should you get, how should you upgrade. Also, at the same time, I was rewarded last night by logging into my TechNet subscription and I seen that the final release of Office 2013 was available. I've only played with it for a few minutes, so I don't have any opinions yet, but I downloaded that. I installed it on this laptop. So now I'm playing with Office 2013, and let's see what happens. And I will report back to you on that. A couple tips from consulting stories in the trenches from this week. I received a phone call from a client that had trouble printing to their work group HP Color Laser Jet. I think it's a 2035N, something like that. Well, they told me they did something bad. I said, well, what? I said, don't worry about it. What did you do? Well, we reset everything to the factory defaults. Now, what would possess someone? Now, I can understand unplugging it and plugging it back in. You know, you want to reboot, you're having a problem printing. But what would possess someone to go out of their way to set this network laser to the factory default? So right off the bat, they've lost the IP address. So everybody that's printing to it, where I have the TCP/IP port to that IP address, they no longer can't print. I said, well, I'm going to have to come in and fix this. Yo, don't worry, it's not an emergency. And I said, I'll get to you tomorrow. And that was yesterday. So I stopped by, and here is the problem. They were getting an error message that would say misfeed, then it would say cleaning. And this would happen all of a sudden every time they were printing multiple pages to this printer. I hate printer problems. I wish all printers would go away. They just eat away at my time and energy. But this one has a happy ending. I set everything back to the IP address, but while I was there, I watched this error happen. So now we just do a little Googling, and we find out in the HP printer forums, well, it seems like a lot of people have the same problem with the very same printer, but it was hard to find an answer. So I had to dig, took a few minutes, and I finally found a post for a person that got a hold of someone in HP tech support that said the following, and that's why I want to share this, because this is something I would have never thought of as a fix. It appears that this particular printer will develop misfeeds. You have to change, even though you're using plain paper and the settings at the printer say plain paper, you got to pick heavy stock paper for that main tray that you're using, even though you're not using heavy stock, and it solves the problem. And then I seen a follow-up of this person with the post saying, fix the problem. We've now been operating months with no issues. So I went in, logged on by just using the browser to log on to the browser interface of the printer. I changed that tray and then watched them print multiple reports. No misfeeds, no errors. It's now been another day and no problems. So let's hope we've fixed that. Now, Alaskan in the chat said, boy, it sounds like a worn feed roller. That could be. But it's an interesting tip that I wanted to share, because I would have never, ever thought of this kind of a tip for this kind of a printer problem. But when you start to think about it, if the roller is worn, and there are some issues. So Rick says, from the Force Field podcast, says that it could be just a poorly designed HP device. We see that often. There is a bug on a problem with scanning back from the HP OfficeJet Pros, where they just have terrible problems where it loses connectivity to the PC. And I've ran into this a lot, where you almost have to have a special bat file that loads the command on startup, and you put that in your startup routine for Windows, so it can remind the printer that, hey, I'm over here and I want you to, for the network scanning, I'm a PC on the network, because it doesn't hold that. You know, there's been lots of issues. Now, I will say this. I am very shocked. When I went to print on my Windows 8, I downloaded an HP printer installation utility that went out and downloaded the Windows 8 driver for my old OfficeJet Pro. I remember going to Windows 7, and it was months. I remember Windows 7 being released in October, and it took until February till I was able to properly print to that printer 3 years ago when Windows 7 came out. So I was shocked that I was able to print to this right away. The official release of Windows 8 is not until tomorrow on Friday. We're recording this on Thursday night here on the 25th of October. I was pleasantly surprised. Now, my Samsung network printer, Windows 8, just found it and loaded the driver automatically. I did nothing. And that was just a network printer, and it just seen it, found it. It was beautiful. But I'm going to have lots of driver's tips because I ran into some issues, and I had to go find some older drivers and load them, but that's for another day. Give a listen, important information about OpenDNS.
Hi, Mike. I'm a longtime listener of your show, and I wanted to discuss something that I've discovered and a topic I don't think I've ever heard discussed on your show. I'm Rod Miller. I'm work in IT in Oklahoma, and I wanted to talk a little bit about OpenDNS and a specific problem I encountered with it. This will probably be a long voicemail and probably not interesting to all of your listeners, so if you don't use this, I understand. This will just serve as documentation of my own problem. I've been a big fan of OpenDNS for quite some time, and I've used it in many situations that I've been involved with for the purpose of just a good general purpose DNS or for the purpose of content filtering. But since I've worked in the IT field for a long time, many of the businesses and homes that I've been involved with are using OpenDNS in some fashion or another. And I know I've heard OpenDNS mentioned from time to time, either on your show or TechVets, but I don't really know what your opinion is of it. However, I'm also a big fan of the Security Now podcast, and I have great respect for Steve Gibson, and I know that he has never been a great proponent of OpenDNS because he claims that it handles DNS queries in a non-standard fashion. And if you download his free utility, the DNS benchmark, OpenDNS will be tested along with other possible DNS servers, and it displays a benchmark of performance results of the DNS server you're using along with other possible DNS servers. And this benchmark software also color codes the results, and OpenDNS is listed with a brown color coding, which indicates that it intercepts name errors. And I knew this to be true because how else would it work for content filtering and some other features it provides? But I never really paid much attention to his warnings because it had never been a problem for me until now. So let me tell you about the problem I had that nearly pulled my hair out for several days. I'd actually been experiencing this problem for quite some time, but finally decided to put everything else aside and troubleshoot the issue. So whenever I would establish a VPN session from my office to another location, all of my local resources from my office would stop working. I could no longer connect to map drives, and sessions that I had opened to other software packages such as VMware vSphere client would fail and present me with a cascade of errors, and print jobs to network printers would fail and so forth. I later learned that if I established a VPN connection to the same location, but established it from somewhere besides my office, I didn't have this problem anymore, and all my local network resources kept working. So the problem was really twofold. This problem would only occur if the system I was establishing the VPN connection to was using OpenDNS as an external forwarder in their own DNS server, and if I established the connection from my office. If I changed the DNS server on the remote site to forward external DNS queries to some other DNS server, such as Cox or Sprint DNS server, it would correct my problem. So the reason why OpenDNS created so many problems for my office is due to the way that OpenDNS handles errors. If you're using OpenDNS in your environment, you can easily test this. So try pinging a host that you know does not exist, such as test.abc123.com. A normal DNS server will respond with ping could not find host test.abc123.com, but if you're using OpenDNS, you'll always get a reply from 67.215.65.132, no matter what invalid address you try to ping. And also, if you have content filtering enabled for your site and you ping something that is in a blocked category, such as pornography or gambling, you'll always get a reply back from a different IP address. And that IP address I found is 67.215.65.130, no matter what blocked host you try to ping. So if you tried to ping www.playboy.com or www.casino.com, you'd always get the same result back from an OpenDNS server. In our office, our Active Directory domain has been around since NT351 and was upgraded to NT4 and 2000 and so forth. And at the time we upgraded our NT4 to 2000, we really didn't understand the concept of DNS domains and the need to have unique internal and external domain names, such as mycompany.com for internal, or external, and mycompany.local for internal, as is an accepted practice today. At the time, I think everyone was trying to determine the best way of doing this, and it's an accepted and supported practice to have the internal and external domains the same, such as mycompany.com, for both internal and external use. But doing it this way requires a lot of extra planning. And at some point, I would like to change and migrate away from this naming convention and rename the internal domain to a .local domain. Anyway, because of the way we have it set up, we have a separate external DNS server that serves the public request, and we have to manually populate certain external entries into our internal Active Directory DNS server. So when I try to establish a VPN connection from my office, which is using the same DNS domain for internal and external, the VPN normally assigns me the remote DNS server as my default DNS server. And after I'm connected and I need to connect to a remote resource, everything is fine because I'm using the remote DNS server, which knows about the remote environment. But if I request something in my local office, such as myfileserver.mycompany.com, the remote DNS server sends a request to its forwarder, which will only be aware of my external domain presence. And a normal DNS server will return a standard error that the internal resource I'm looking for is not available. And somehow, through the magic of VPN, and I'm a little fuzzy on exactly how this works under the hood, but it sends the request back to my local internal DNS server and puts me in touch with my local resources. In the case of a situation where the remote DNS is using OpenDNS, when I ask for a resource that does not exist on the external domain, such as my server, myfileserver.mycompany.com, OpenDNS incorrectly replies with a working IP address of 67.215.65.132, and that confuses my VPN client and breaks all valid communication to my internal network. So I understand that most networks today will have separate internal and external domain names and will not run into this particular situation. But my point is that this is just one situation where the use of a non-standard DNS solution could produce unreliable and unpredictable results. I think of the hours and days I have spent pulling my hair out trying to troubleshoot this problem that would not have occurred if I was using a standards-based DNS solution. because I had been involved in so many companies where I had configured an OpenDNS solution, everywhere I could think to establish a test VPN connection encountered this problem. I finally started putting the pieces together when I connected from another network and did not have the same problem that I started to figure it all out. So, if I ran into this problem using OpenDNS, how many other unexplained problems might there be down the road that could be contributed to the use of a non-standard DNS solution such as OpenDNS? So thanks for taking the time to listen. Hope you use this on your show, and if not, I know it's probably a little dry, but just my 2 cents worth, and thought it would be worth sharing some of my problems with it. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for taking the time and outlining exactly what your issue was with OpenDNS. Now remember, he has a VPN and he has Active Directory where he's got internal and external addresses, which is the way you should be set up. An example, I have an Exchange server. My mail.abc.com internal would point to the internal address. Outside, it would be the external address, but still would be mail.abc.com. This is the proper way to set up Active Directory with integrated DNS. But I understand what's happening with this OpenDNS. I ran into an issue with a business client who has UPS WorldShip clients on multiple workstations. We were having a nightmare with the WorldShip trying to find the remote client within the same building to have its, you know, I guess you have like a host and a client for making the UPS for someone who does a whole lot of shipments. And we had no Active Directory going on here. When I changed and removed OpenDNS, it solved the problem. OpenDNS is a great product for small businesses, for a lot of small businesses, and for home users. It really does help you protect. Is it a tad slower? I found it depends where you're querying. I found it a faster response to main websites. I get a very fast response back. Maybe some of the obscure sites, you might have a little, it might be a little slower. I don't believe everybody should just go remove OpenDNS. No, that's not what we're saying. What we're saying is OpenDNS is not for everyone. And if you have a big network and you've got other things happening like VPNs and you have Active Directory, you've got to be very careful about deploying OpenDNS. And that's why I want it to play this. When I heard it, I was like, wow, this is a long voicemail, but you know what? It's good stuff, and it's things that you should hear and you should take in, because you might run into this maybe at your office. Maybe you're consulting. Maybe you have a friend or anybody that you communicate with or goes to you for repairs or for support. You're now armed with more information. So this way, this can help you on whether you should be deploying OpenDNS or not. But I still think for the typical individual at home, OpenDNS is a good thing. Let's move on. We got some great emails here. This is from Luke. Hi, Mike. I have a question that a lot of people would like to know the answer. Making an off-site backup. We are all aware that we need to make backups, but what to do when our on-site devices fail or are destroyed or stolen, whatever. This is where we have off-site backups come in. My question is, what is the best way to back up SBS, that Small Business Server, and Exchange, and other Windows server files locally? Let me answer that. I only have one answer. The ultimate answer for backing up an SBS server is Shadow Protect. And that's at storagecraft.com. They have an SBS version. I have many clients who have SBS, and 100% of my SBS clients are using Shadow Protect to back them up. It's flawless. The thing just works. That is the absolute and the only answer you'll get from me for SBS. Now, what is the best way to do offsite backups from a Windows server, 2008 and 2012? Well, I have a couple answers there. I have a client that uses a service. Because of FINRA compliance, we use Envelock, E-N-V-E-L-O-C. It's not cheap, but it fits the compliance, and I have a SBS 2008 server backing up in the cloud. By the way, we also do a Shadow Protect local backup. We do that a couple hours before the evening backup that goes to the cloud. We do this every night. There's another program I have another client using, and that's Jungle Disk. So that works. That's actually, I think, Amazon at the back end. Mozy Pro is also a good solution for backing up in the cloud. They're the three services at definitely various price ranges that I would recommend for offsite backup. What are the different ways for people to solve this problem? Well, it's very easy. You make sure you have a local backup that's doing a full image of the server, and it's doing that to a local attached external USB disk drive. Then after that's done, you make sure you're backing up in the cloud. Now, I would even go to one step further. If you got SQL databases or you got, once a week, I would have a script that would then automatically shut down the SQL database and do a complete offline backup of the data as just another precaution, another backup, and maybe doing that once a week. Depending on the situation, depending on what software is running, you would tweak this, but you got to have a local backup. And for this, that's just for fault. I was going to say not for fault tolerance, but that's just for instant recovery, but it is not a disaster recovery. A disaster recovery is you are preparing for the whole building to be destroyed. Something happens. Pull up one day and there's fire trucks. The building's just burnt down. What do you do? Well, you better have an offsite backup. Luke, great question. This is from Will. This is going to be a little more complicated. Questions about networking. Hi, Mike. First, I want to say I love your show and Tech Vets too. I was wondering, have you ever ran into this problem? I have a client. Well, not really a client, just some person that calls me once in a while to help out with computer maintenance, like updating Windows updates and virus scanning, which I already put Microsoft Security Essentials and Malwarebytes Pro, as you and Carrie have recommended. Well, anyway, this client runs a small business with a partner, and they have about 10 employees overall and has two offices about 40 miles apart from each other. One office has about 5 to 4 employees and the same with the other office. They have about 5 computers in each office, so 10 overall, and one Windows home server for file sharing. A little info on the client. His business partner is the IT guy, but frequently he's too busy to fix anything, so that's when I come in. But also, the IT guy is a little hot-headed. Anyway, the issue he is having is the network is slow. All the computers connected take about 6 minutes to boot up, and it's the same with the other office. I believe they have a site-to-site VPN to the WHS, but I don't know. I was talking with the non-IT guy. I think it could be ISP issues since they're using Roadrunner, and Roadrunner is like 10 meg down, 2 meg up. Well, that's not a bad connection. But also, I think it could be the home server. I know there's a limit in users, but I don't know much about networking. 10, I don't think, is the limit. It's not recommended. So the client asked me if I could help him figure out a way to make things run quicker, but I'm not sure where to start. Any suggestions would be great. Thank you. I wrote back and said, what are the conditions here for the systems? They're Windows 7 Pro. It's a Core i3 processor, and they all have 320 gig hard drives. So I got some basic info here. If multiple computers are having all of them having a slow time in booting up. 6 minutes is completely unacceptable. And if they're all set that way, I want you to go look at something. Whenever there's a network and boot times take a long time, that means DNS, our old friend DNS. So I want to know what the DNS settings are for all these computers. What are they getting? They have a router. What is that router? And what is the switch that they're all plugged into? You might have a switch problem. A story real quick that I got an emergency call this week to a client in Philadelphia where all of their systems could not talk to the server. They were having massive problems, and I got the call late Monday, and I said, I'll be down there first thing Tuesday morning. Can you hang in there? And they said, yes. And this is actually a Spanish radio station in Philadelphia. So I go down there on Tuesday morning, and I said, everybody's down, right? Nobody can talk to anybody. One system could talk to the internet, and that was the server. And I looked, and I seen it was plugged directly into the router. Well, how could anybody else talk? Now, they swore that nobody touched anything. Somebody touched something because cables were moved and things weren't connected with the way they should be. So I started from the outside in and from the perimeter. I first made sure that the Comcast router is performing the way it should be. So here's what I want you to do, Will. I want you to take the router and I want you to plug a PC directly into it and see that you can get out to the internet. And I want you to go to speedtest.net. I want to see what speed you're getting. And I want to know that you are connecting, not across the VPN. I want to know that you're getting out and you're getting a good, reliable connection to the internet. Now, back up one step. This is what I did on Tuesday. The firewall. I plugged into the firewall and I seen I'm getting out. I'm getting an IP address. I'm connecting to the internet. Everything's great. Wonderful. Nice. Now, we want to back out a little more. And we go to the switch. Bang. That was it. When I plugged into the switch, I couldn't get an IP address. I couldn't connect to everything. I said, this is your culprit, guys, right here. I was there 15 minutes and diagnosed that it was the switch. And I kid you not, we went out to Staples. We bought a 24-port gig Netgear switch because we needed one right away. We put it in place. We plugged everything in. Everybody's working. Happy, happy. Life is good. So while I was there, they had a couple other items on their punch list, so I kind of hung out and fixed everything that they had on their list. I want you to do the same thing. I want you to take one of those desktops and now plug it in by itself onto that switch. And I want you to see, can you get out? Are you getting an IP address? What is the device? Which device is the one that's giving you the IP addresses? I want you to make sure that that's working. You could have a bad switch or a malfunctioning switch. If they're all plugged into that and they're trying to get their IP address and they can't do it, you may need to bring a little cheap fast switch, like get a cheap 8-port gig switch and bring it in and bypass the switch that's there and see, does that improve things? Because you're not saying one computer's slow, all of them, I'm not looking at the computer at this point. There's something else happening. Now, we're not going to take Windows Home Server off the table yet that there's a problem, or for that matter, the VPN. Now, here's a question. What is the VPN and how are they connecting? Is it like a high-end Cisco VPN? I don't think so. It doesn't sound like that. How is this VPN? Is it Hamachi, the free version from LogMeIn? We got a few more questions here that we got to investigate. How are things running with the VPN? But you must isolate your test environment and do it with one machine, where you unplug all the other ones from the switch so you can now see, okay, let's plug in one at a time all those other five computers. Do we have a bad NIC card advertising doing all kinds of nasty stuff to that switch? And so anybody that's plugged into it, we got a problem. We got lots of issues possibly happening here. So I don't think we're going to answer your full question tonight, but I think I've armed you with enough to go forth and start testing and seeing what you find. Report back to me, Will, and if you need help, obviously I'm available, consulting, MHS Consulting, and you can always email me, mike@mhsconsulting.net. One word, mhsconsulting.net. And I will contact you right away. We'll work out the fees, and I will walk you through this and help you out if this person will allow it, or if you want me to help you out. I've done that helping lots of other consultants where they needed some help with some clients, and let's see if I can help you that way. But I definitely have given you enough things to start with diagnosing where the problem is. This is from Bas from the Netherlands. Portable applications and file extension association in Windows solution. As a longtime listener to your show, I know you are, like myself, a fan of portable applications. I use all kinds of portable applications: Pale Moon, Thunderbird, Notepad++, Explorer++, Freeplane. That's a mind mapping tool. Ooh, I'll have to check that out. In Windows Explorer, you want, of course, what you double-click a file that it's opened with the corresponding portable application, where applicable. Double-clicking a .txt file should open with Notepad++ Portable. I found out that associating a portable application with a certain file extension is not trivial in Windows. It involves registry editing. The following tool saved all my problems. It's File Types Man. And we have the CNET download link. And note that File Types Man is a portable application itself. I thought this is helpful for a lot of your listeners. Thank you very much. And of course, all of the links will be in the show notes for tonight's show, for everything that I've talked about. This will be in there. Here's another one that I received as a comment on the website. And it's from, I know I'm butchering this name, and it's Nijin, and he sent us the link downjustforme.com. And we've talked about this a long time ago, I think, or some site that's similar. If you're having trouble getting to a website, is that website down, or is it down just for you? And this is a great way to test by putting that URL in, and it'll tell you whether that site's really up or not. And it's called downjustforme.com. Great, great tip. From Victor. Hey, Mike. First off, I love your show. Keep up the good work. I'm a fairly new listener and thought I'd contribute by asking a question and getting your take on this topic. I'm mainly a Windows guy, but I have recently set up a new network with all Mac OS X workstations and servers. I installed a SonicWall TZ100, and I thought maybe I could do some network bandwidth monitoring with SonicWall's Viewpoint service. However, as it turns out, SonicWall Viewpoint does not support OS X. SonicWall recommended setting up a virtual Windows environment to load SonicWall Viewpoint. So my questions: how do Mac guys monitor bandwidth? Oh man, do I have the answer for you. In a pure OS X environment, how can I track all my bandwidth usage throughout the day, week, month? I looked into SolarWinds, but I didn't see anywhere where they had .dmg downloads. Any suggestions? Yes. Your answer, believe it or not, is Linux. There is a great product and distribution called Untangle. Untangle is a free distribution with software that not only is it a firewall, bandwidth monitoring, it will filter URLs. It is the ultimate appliance, and it's built on top of Linux. You can download the free version and set it up on an old workstation. Just make sure there's two NIC cards in it, and it just works. I set that up in my house before I deployed it to two clients. I have a client that is 100% Mac. They are an orthodontist, and every workstation is Mac. And he had a problem where he wanted to monitor employees and help with the bandwidth. We bought the Untangle appliance, which is just like a little PC stuffed in a small box with a couple network ports. It is so easy to set up and install. Now, you may not want the free version. There are some limits, but the paid version, the appliance is not that expensive. You could do this for under $1,000 for the whole solution for the office. And you're not going to just get the bandwidth monitoring. You're going to get a lot more than you even bargained for. You're going to be filtering URLs, protecting from bad websites and spam. There's so many things you can do. Now you can turn them off, and it's the easiest thing to monitor. I set this up in like 5 minutes and had the main doctor from this practice on a day the office was closed. We put this in together, and then we explored it, and I showed him how to get in there, how to tweak it, how to get his reports. It was beautiful. Go to untangled.com. That is your answer, Victor. All right, final email for the night. This is from Patrick. Hi, Mike. I'm not sure it gets any better than this. This is in response to my call on what are good cloud-based phone systems for a small business. And you've responded incredibly, and I really appreciate it. This is another one. And he says, OneBox.com has all the features I can imagine, including transferring calls to other virtual extensions, simultaneous rings, conference calls, incoming faxes, voicemail, voicemail to email, automated attendant, live attendant, and more. I have used it and my clients use it. OneBox also provides their service to other companies for resale, so they must be doing it right. OneBox Receptionist or OneBox Live Receptionist have plans for multiple lines needed. OneBox Executive has it covered for small businesses like ours. Here's the link to the phone earlier features. This is from Patrick from Springfield. Thank you very, very much for that. And I will absolutely put that on my list and look into that. I have no music for the end of the show tonight, so I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed. I really appreciate it. If you want to help support the show, please use my Amazon links. It's now getting holiday season time. You're going to be doing that Christmas shopping. If you buy from Amazon or know anyone buying from Amazon, use my link. Your price is the same, but I get a commission and it helps support the show. The links are amazon.micnation.net. So put that in your toolbar or add that as a bookmark. The other link, miketechshow.com/Amazon. That'll take you to Amazon. Make your purchase and a small commission will come back to me. And that really helps support the show. And I thank everybody for continuing to use those links. It really helps. Thank you so much. That's it for tonight's show. I will talk to you same time, same channel next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.